What's going on, everybody? Steve Inman here, along with Chris Brito. We're talking Knicks, we're talking Celtics, we're talking all things hoops here on the All Hoops Podcast. Thank you for joining us, as always. Chris, let's just get right into it. Knicks have their biggest win of the year Thursday night. RJ Barrett with the prayer out of nowhere to avoid the game going in overtime. And all people are talking about is Julius Randle kind of cursing out the fans. What is going on?
So you and me, we've gone back and forth about this issue, but let's recap real quick. You know, the Knicks were down 25 points to the Celtics, who are probably just as bad as the Celtics right now. And then, you know, Randle was really struggling off the gate. And then toward the end of the game, he started playing better. The team started playing better. And so, you know, after he made a layup, he started doing a thumbs down gesture to the fans. And so he was asked about it after the game, and what he meant to say was shut the F up with that gesture when he was asked about it. So, you know, I feel like Knicks fans are sort of divided in two camps with this. Like, they sort of agree with him because, you know, fans in New York especially have been especially harsh on him this season. And then there's another set of camp. There's another camp, the one that you belong to, that athletes in New York should never, or athletes in general, should never criticize the fans. Because, you know, as you well said before the game, before our podcast, you know, the fans pay for the merch, pay for the tickets, and they have every right to boo if the star player is not playing up to standards. So now we're here. You and me are going to talk about it. So this is where I stand. I'm actually in the former camp. I actually think that Julius Randle has a point. I think Julius Randle has grown so much in his tenure with the Knicks, right? Like, he came in, he was sort of like the afterthought, like the consolation prize after we didn't get Kevin Durant. And, you know, and now he had this amazing season where he had, you know, he was basically an all-NBA player. He got a big deal, and he basically led us to the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. So this, now fast forward to this season, we've been struggling off the gate. He hasn't been playing up to par, which I think was sort of expected. But, you know, there's been issues with his effort. He hasn't been good at, from three. So I think it remains to be seen, like, was the player that we saw last year the same guy this year? Like, we don't know about that. Anyway, he was playing so poorly that people were calling for Toppin's minutes. And I think he had COVID. He saw what people were saying prior to getting COVID and after getting COVID. Like, and he were like, now fans could really see what the team was like with Toppin. And fans didn't like that. And he obviously saw what fans were saying about him. And not to say that the same fans that were in the stands yesterday were the same fans online. But you kind of get the gist here. Like, fans were not happy with his performance. And so it all leads to this moment where he did the thumbs down. And I think it's okay. I think as a player, you can express your emotions. Sure, he used a cuss word to describe how he was feeling. And not ideal, obviously. But I think that when you start messing with someone's psyche like that, when you start saying not so great things about it, like, I think everyone has their limits. And I just think Randle just didn't want to take it anymore. And I think, you know, that's okay too. You can say this and that. He never said you can't. He never said, you know, don't criticize him, right? I think you just get caught up in that moment. And he hasn't come out with a full explanation why as to why this happened, so it could be something else. But I just think that he was frustrated. I think he's frustrated that, like, I'm sure he knows he hasn't been playing well. I think his reaction was justified. You know, I think as fans, yes, you're entitled to enter to the game, but you're not entitled to, you know.
You're not entitled to boo a guy? Chris,
you're not entitled to have a player sort of like if you tell a player to jump, he doesn't have to jump just because you're a
fan. That's not what they're saying, though. They're booing him because he was not playing well, and they're down 25 points. They're paying a lot of money. The Garden is not cheap, as you know. If it was, we would be there every night.
They're booing the team.
They're booing the team, you know, and there, as you said, there have been times when he has not hustled this year. He's on a max contract. He's the face of the franchise. The expectation is he's going to be a borderline all-star. You know, he has not been that this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That does not give people the right to go online and say horrible things to his face. It does give them the right, in my opinion, to boo. It's booing and cheering. You know, if he comes out and he has 40, 12, and 12, or 25, 12, and 12 in the next game, they're going to be MVP chance. So, like, you're going to take the best and the worst. That's how it goes. And in the history of sports, the fans have never been traded. This has never been a team where they're like, you know what, Julius Randle's too good to deserve this. Let's get rid of the fans. That's not how it works. You're going to have to deal with them. And it reminds me a lot of what happened to Javi Baez and the Mets. Go on.
Okay, you say that, right? You're saying fans should never be muzzled, right? Like, well, within the –
I'm not saying they shouldn't be muzzled. I'm saying they should be allowed to boo.
Okay.
That's it.
That's fine. They can boo. But he can also – he can also, like, say how he feels too. And I think – I think part of the reaction yesterday was a buildup of all the things I mentioned earlier, plus the COVID, like the shit that people were saying to about him while he was having COVID. Like, I think that's what it was. I think, to be honest, I think fans in New York can especially go really far, and I think there's a sense of entitlement as well. If you're a Knicks fan, like, and you know, to be fair, we've gone through a really dark.
Let's hear what that means.
Sure.
This is the worst franchise in the sport for the last 20 years.
Exactly. That's exactly it, right? Like, we've endured such bad times that the person responsible for the somewhat good times is not playing up to par to our expectations that we are entitled to, like, criticize him. Sure, you can, but, like, players are humans.
Fans are not booing guys for missing shots. They're booing guys for lack of hustle. I think that's fair if you're paying customer to ask for. And when you're down 25, it's not because
ask 20,000 fans at MSG why they were booing, are they all going to say what you said?
I don't know what they're going to say, but I would say a majority of them got frustrated. And I think more often than not, when you're down that many points, it's not because the other team is just outplaying you. It's because you're not hustling. You're not doing the little things. And I really believe that, honestly, you know, Julius Randle at his best is a very important part of this team that is needed. And it's concerning that whether you agree with the booing or not agree with the booing, it's concerning that it seems to be in his head now. And you really need him to be at his best if this team is going to do anything this year. If not, they're going to be a floating 8 seed to 11 seed play-in. Maybe they get to the first round, but like you want more. Like, Knicks fans want more. We want more. And you're going to need out of Julius Randle to do that.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? The one thing I will agree with you is that the best thing about New York City fans in general is that we don't coddle players. Like, you have to earn every single thing. Why do people love Quickly so much? Because Quickly, no matter, even if he's shooting really poorly, he always brings out his best.
Right. I mean, this is an organization, like, this is a fan base that wanted to build, like, a Porzingis statue. This is a team that was chanting MVP for Julius Randle.
So you're saying that we're not rational.
Not only are we not rational, we are a very forgetful fan base where if this guy is literally thumbs downing the fans and booing and basically saying, you know, F you back, we will forgive him very quickly if he has just one good game in his next game. That is simple as that. We adore and cherish the good players, and we boo the ones that aren't playing up to expectations. And I don't think that's unreasonable.
Okay. I think we're going to go in circles in this, but the one thing I will say, and has nothing to do with Julius Randle, is that he will go as far as he takes us. That's just the bottom line. So I think right now we're in a marriage with Julius Randle, whether we like it or not. I don't have a problem yet. I think the one thing I will say is that, like, with that huge contract comes with bigger expectations, and I'm not justifying. Wait. Comes with bigger expectations, and there's a level of that like I think hits players on their first year when they have that big contract.
Okay.
You know,
that's fair. Yeah.
Like, listen, all Randall needs to do, like, okay, his shot is not working, but he's really good at driving to the basket and making points in the paint. I think he should go back to basics. You know, if he's, like, posting up, you know, maybe he could, you know, pass it out to his wings and, like, just open up the offense a little more. He's not really making plays the way he was last year. And it may just be because there aren't good enough weapons around him. I mean, he didn't have them last year, but, you know, you had safety nets with Reggie Bullock. You know, Fournier has really been struggling this year too. So
unless it's Boston, then he's the best player in the world.
Can we talk about that for a second?
What's going on there? It doesn't make any sense. It's been like 3 games now.
I read somewhere that he's averaging like 35 or 36 points every time he sees the Celtics in a Knick uniform.
And then 11 points a game everywhere else.
That's amazing.
Shooting over 50% three.
I think there was something. So he has scored around like 500 points a season. 100 of those points have been against Boston. So 20% of what he has scored this season has been against his former team.
It's just so weird. He's like one of those guys that like seems like a big game player, but then just doesn't show up in the Oklahoma City games or the smaller games. So we'll have to see there, but the Knicks are going to need more of Randall and Fournier at their best if they're going to do anything this year. And I'm encouraged. I do believe they can do it.
You know what's crazy? We just need half or even a third of what Fournier did last night. We don't need.
You're getting a third now. He was averaging 35 plus. Now he's averaging like 12. So you're getting a third. You just need
a little more than a third.
A little more. You need half. About half. 17 a game on decent shooting. They're in great shape. Great shape.
So this pod is going to come out before their game on Saturday. How many points is he going to score that night on Saturday?
I think he's going to score 30.
Okay.
Boston.
Right. Okay.
And then he's going to go back to being a pumpkin. I don't know what's going on with him, but it is what it is. And he's another guy that has gotten some boos this year. And he goes, look, I got a big contract. I haven't played great. It's part of the deal. So at least he gets it. And hopefully the fans and Randall can both act better towards each other going forward, because it is very important.
Yeah. Wait, one more thing. Big shout out to Rowan Barrett, who hit the game winner on Thursday night. He was struggling the whole game.
He's having a very bad game. And he was another guy that probably was going to get booed. And he was getting lost on screens and stuff, trying to cover Marcus Smart. And to the point where Thibodeau didn't even want to put him on Tatum. He had Evan Fournier on Tatum, which is just insane. And they still somehow win this game down 25. I mean,
and Tatum scored on Barrett too.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a great win. It was an unexplainable win if you didn't watch the game. But
what a catastrophe. What a catastrophe, though, if we didn't pull.
It was a catastrophe for one side. It was a catastrophe for the Celtics, who just can't seem to get out of their own way. And now you have, you know, they lose this game by 25. They've blown big fourth quarter leads time and time again this year. They're 18-21 on the year. And Ime Udoka, the new coach, basically ripped them after the game for their lack of mental toughness. And I want to just read this really quick quote. I think it's a lack of mental toughness to fight through those adverse times. And basically that's rough. And you have a team that they're not really that young anymore. Tatum and Brown have been in the league, you know, 5+ years. They're on their max deals. Marcus Smart's been in the league about a decade. Al Horford's been here for about a decade. You know, Robert Williams kind of come into his own. They're all getting paid. Like, what's going on here? Is it as simple as this group just doesn't fit well together? Like, is it unsalvageable? This has been now the second year, would you say, of this just looking like a utter disaster?
It just, to me, it seems like there's no real leadership on that team. So your best player usually has to be the leader. And I don't know if Tatum has been a leader. He reminds me a lot of, like, I'm not saying Melo per se, but that sort of
aspect. Reminds me of Melo.
I mean, yeah.
That was his comp coming out of Duke.
That sort of aspect where, like, okay, he's the best player, but he's not the leader. Like, that year that we went to, what, the divisional, the semifinals against Indiana? Oh, second round. Sorry. Wishful thinking. You know, are the leaders of that team were Jason Kidd.
Camby,
Rasheed Wallace. It wasn't Melo.
Yeah.
So you're saying
go sign a bunch of 40-year-old vets.
I mean, that would help put these other guys, these younger guys, into place. I mean, I think that was part of the reasoning, being Horford back, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it hasn't really worked to this point yet to turn things around. But it's really interesting, because this is a team, basically the same group, that went to the conference finals 3 out of 4 years. And they were a game short here, a game short there.
You're forgetting that.
This is the same group with Kyrie, and Kyrie missed the whole playoffs, and they went on the run without him.
Okay, listen, that was a very, very weak East.
So that is that the answer? Is the East just caught up?
I think that might be it. In addition to that, you had Kemba Walker when they were in the bubble. So the team is just not that talented. I mean, there's no
So is it time to blow it up?
I think it is. But like the other aspect too is like who can you get for Jaylen Brown? It's gonna fit. Or who are you going to get for Tatum?
I think if they're trading one, they're trading Brown. I don't know if I agree with that, but that's what I think they would do. And I wonder if a Brown for Simmons, Maxey, and picks makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Boston, are you really afraid of helping a division rival like that? I don't know. But they really just need an impact point guard who can get Tatum the ball in spots. And I still believe that they're a piece away from turning this from a 500 team to a championship team. And I would be very scared of trading Brown or Tatum, because I just think there's a way to find that player, whether it's in the draft or, you know, some young player who's not getting enough minutes somewhere else. But I mean, once you make that trade, you can't undo it. You're getting rid of a guy who, in my opinion, is going to make 5+ all-star teams. So you got to be really careful. I know it's frustrating right now, but I would probably just try to stay pat and just try to see if I can upgrade around the edges. And as you said, try to bring in some of those older vets who can kind of take on the leadership while letting Tatum and Brown do the scoring.
It's just so clear that, like, there's no sense of urgency. I mean –
It's so weird, though. It's been years of this now.
And I wonder, I do think that Brown and Tatum are friends. I don't think they aren't. It's just a situation where, like, if you really think about it, the team is really not that talented either. I mean, apart from those two, okay, Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart's a nice player. Robert Williams had, what, 5 or 6 blocks last night? He's a solid center. Like, that's fine. You know?
But after those guys, can we really say that the rest of the team is
no
talented?
Horford's fine.
Sorry, they are talented because they're in the NBA. But are they talented enough for a team like this to take them to the next level? I don't know.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't want to trade any of them either. But I think if you're looking in terms of the future, you need to sort of put the right pieces around those guys. I mean, they have the envy of the NBA, two young wings. But It's really up to Brad Stevens to fix this roster, because it's just not a good roster. I mean, Dennis Schroeder
knows well. He was in those locker rooms. He knows how those guys gel together. So if they wind up trading him out, well, he's still there. He's running the team.
I mean, you know what I mean.
So it's like if he winds up saying, "Hey, we're trading Jaylen Brown, or we're trading Marcus Smart, or one of these guys," like, he knows He knows what's going on, how those guys are as people. And I would hang on as long as I could. And just look, they just haven't drafted well since they made these two amazing picks with Tatum and Brown. They haven't drafted well. You know, they've had a lot of good picks. And, you know, who's the best player they've had drafted wise in the last 5 years? It's probably Peyton Pritchard. And he's a nicely put, maybe a backup point guard.
See, I think the issue with the Celtics is that they've had these trove of assets for a very long time. And you and me, we had a fight over it over the summer, I think, where the Celtics, and Brad Stevens, I'm not accusing Brad Stevens per se of this, but how many years did we hear the Celtics were involved in so many trade deals?
Well, that's Danny Ainge. Brad Stevens just became the
president. No. I know. That's why I'm saying I'm not accusing him of that.
Yeah.
But Danny Ainge, for the longest time, since he was like GM, he would be involved in so many potential trades and none of them happened. It was so annoying. And what did you get out of it? Like, okay, fine. You did get Kemba.
Well, they've added some good players, but none of those guys worked out. They added Kyrie Irving. They added Gordon Hayward coming off of all-star years in Utah. Both of those guys became injury prone and didn't want to be there. They added Kemba Walker.
Kyrie also didn't want to be
all
there.
All-NBA year. And he couldn't stay healthy either. So it's like bad drafting and just terrible luck. Terrible luck. Those guys were not injury-prone players. Kemba Walker was leading the league in minutes every year. Gordon Hayward was not an injured player in Utah, and he comes in his first game as a Celtic. He breaks his leg on national TV. That's terrible luck.
Oh, God. The image popped up in my head.
I mean, it's like, I think Danny Ainge did a great job, and I would give him a 90. It wasn't good enough, and now – he just didn't get that finishing touch on, and he probably should have made the move for Davis or Butler or one of those key, got Paul George. There were so many guys they could have went out and got with those draft picks. It's really a shame. And now, and I know we're on a tangent here, I'll be really quick, but like Utah, they're having a great year. They have a great front office, a great chemistry. They fixed the Gobert-Mitchell thing, and what does ownership do? They bring in Danny Ainge to kind of just be the president of the team. Now all these guys are like, we all report to him now. So very strange. I'm curious to see how that shakes up there. Dennis Lindsay has been a great GM. And I'm curious if how that affects him, if he wants a change going forward, because he's been a great drafter and now all of a sudden he's reporting to somebody else that's not ownership. So that'll be fascinating to me going forward. And let's get to final thoughts.
That really was a tangent.
It was. All right, Chris, final thoughts time over here. We got an interesting trade rumor. Ben Simmons could be on the move. We've been talking about this too long, but the new team involved, the Atlanta Hawks. And Chris, this makes some sense. This is a team that has been talking about how they would love to add another impact player in like a 3-for-1 swap where they're giving out three pretty decent players. They have a pretty good roster of good NBA players. They just don't have a lot of great NBA players. So if they're able to switch a Cam Reddish, maybe a Kevin Huerter, and then a Gallinari for cap reasons for Ben Simmons, I think that could make sense for both sides where the Sixers get an upgrade in a couple of spots and the Hawks get to, you know, consolidate their roster.
So I love that deal for the Hawks. I think you need a next level type of player that can get you from where you are, mediocrity, to back to where you were last year, not mediocrity. Actually, you know, just one series away from making the NBA Finals. I can appreciate executive teams that are aggressive in trying to make their teams better and realizing what they have is not good enough. And, you know, I think it's smart on them to be doing this now. And like Cam Reddish is never going to get the amount of minutes that he needs. So
you get paid soon. So you might as well
get paid soon.
Let somebody else do that.
And honestly, Cam Reddish would be great. I mean, we saw him in the NBA playoffs last year, hit those like, what was it, 7 threes in a row or 6 threes in a row?
Yeah.
Anyway, I like the deal. I just don't know if the Sixers will go for it because they probably need players who can go right now. Like
I think Cam Reddish can go right now. Kevin Huerter there's something called the Kevin Huerter game, which was in the playoffs against the Sixers. So they know as well as anybody how well he can play. So it really depends on what they're looking for. Are they looking for a franchise point guard who basically is Ben Simmons but can shoot? Or are they looking for to spread out his money on a couple of different guys? I don't know when, like, are you going to just really let him sit out all year and waste another year of Joel Embiid's prime? You just can't do it.
I think that's the biggest crime of the whole Ben Simmons thing. Because even if, listen, whatever you have against Ben Simmons, okay, whatever. Doesn't, I don't really care. But that's a roster spot that could be going to a player that could be producing for the team. Listen, whatever the reasons are, like, if there's any reason to do this now, it's to do it for Embiid. Because, you know, as great as the Sixers are, they beat the Nets, I believe, last week in a seven game series against the Nets. Can Embiid carry them for seven games? I mean, he probably can, but will it be enough?
Yeah. Well, speaking of the Nets, Kyrie Irving, Chris, is back. He's playing only road games. It seems like he got what he wanted. He looked good. You know, they beat up the Pacers. James Harden looks good again. Kevin Durant is playing at an MVP level, as we've discussed at length. Do you see this being, you know, obviously that we think they're the team to beat. Do you see them being unbeatable right now?
Yes, but it's not for the reason you think. I think James Harden is back to the level that we're used to seeing him. And I think that's really important because he's really the – I'm not going to insult Kevin Durant and say that he's the engine that makes his team go, but in some ways he is because he sort of distributes the ball enough so that, like, you can make this Nets from a dangerous team to a really dangerous team. And I think that's what's really going to – matter in the playoffs, right? Like, as Kevin Durant's amazing, I'm not even insinuating that anybody in the league can guard him, but if he has an off game, you have four other guys on the floor that could be a threat, and that's where James Harden comes in, and I think that's really what makes his Nets team even more unbeatable. So now you add in Kyrie at this point of where they are. I mean, try to find a weakness. I mean, try to find a weakness with this team. Like, you're going to have to, like, find a way to score enough to beat them. You know, those guys could ISO once per game. Like, they could ISO every single possession. It's just tough. I think they were the clear favorites. They might be automatic favorites to the NBA, for the NBA championship, if barring any injury.
Yeah, I really thought that Kyrie coming back and having to change how they play in road games only is going to be a distraction. I still believe it's going to be a distraction. It's going to be an adjustment, but at the same time, who cares? Like, you have, you know, as you said, they can just go ISO with Durant and Harden and just change it up like that. Like, teams are going to have to outscore them. They look unbeatable to me. Even if they're, instead of a big three, they're 2.5 with Kyrie playing half the time. I think it doesn't matter. I think he's still going to help them, and they like having him around. I mean, if there was a chemistry issue with them being annoyed with him, we have not seen it, because it seems like they're all happy he's there. And, you know, getting Joe Harris back, and I think there'll be buyout guys at the deadline who are going to be like, hey, I would love to get a free ring. And they can replace, you know, Blake Griffin's minutes, who has not been good, with one of those guys. They're going to get better. And that's the scary part about this whole thing. And yes, as you said, I think they're the team to beat. They are the unbeatable one. And yeah.
So, So, I'm with you. And I think Kyrie has a very high approval rating. The one thing that bugs me about the whole situation is how the ownership sort of masqueraded bringing him back. They were saying that they needed bodies. They're basically back at full strength. You don't really need Kyrie, but let's not, you know, it was a very poor pretense.
They don't need Kyrie.
They don't need Kyrie for, like, to have another player on the floor, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of buyout people, I think one of the best stories this year, even though it really saved the NBA's butt, has been the amount of G League players that have been, you know, called up to play in the league and essentially save the NBA from shutting down. And so, you know, you saw a bunch of Knicks guys get called up, called up to play in different teams. Miles Powell, right? He was on the team. I think he played for the Sixers for a bit. What a great story. I mean, all these different guys who are having second chances or their first chances, right? Like, I mean, the guys in second chance that have come to mind, like Lance Stevenson, he scored 20 in the first quarter against the Nets the other night. Bismack Biyombo got a contract with the Suns.
Yeah.
You know, after Ayton and their other big guys went down with COVID or injuries. And, you know, Diallo on the Pistons, the kid from Queens, he's been lining it up for the Pistons. I mean, they're still losing, but
he's been there all year though, right? He's just getting more minutes now, right?
I thought he was called up.
I thought he's been there all year.
Because I picked him up in my fantasy team and he's been killing it.
Yeah, no, he's been great. But,
I mean, just these guys who would be buried on the bench or getting these chances. I mean, we saw it with our own team with the Knicks, and like they're coming out here and
saw that kid Sykes against the Knicks with the Pacers.
Yes.
He had like 16 or 18, and he's, you know, they're battling like their lives depend on it. And sometimes in the dull days of a regular season where it's like, all right, we're in game 43, it's this team. And, you know, it's hard to get up for some of these games. We've heard guys like Trae Young come out and say, we're having trouble getting up for these regular season games. Well, tell that to a guy who's making 30 grand a year in the G League. You know, this is his big opportunity, his big moment. And a lot of these guys, I'm hoping, will stick around when the COVID guys come back. So yes, great point there. And let's end the show with we have a little breaking news. Julius Randle came out with his statement, basically apologized and said, I was being passionate and I don't want to undermine how much New York City and the Knicks fans mean to me. And I just think, you know, that's a great way to handle it. I don't think he could have handled it any better. And I think it goes to show that I was right and that he, you know, did overreact, and you should not attack the fans because you can't beat the fans. You just can't. And
you can't treat the fans.
You can't beat them, I'm saying. Like,
no, they're going to be here for – But you also said you can't trade the fans.
So at the end of the day, I think they forgive him and he forgives them.
So you're speaking on behalf of all Knicks fans.
I'm speaking on behalf of – I mean, just looking at the comments, they're all like,
say sorry. He didn't say sorry in that whole message. I think he's just trying to
– It was like the – you know, if you've ever seen Sonny in Philadelphia where they're trying to do that. And literally it's like, say sorry without saying sorry is the best way to do it. And Julius handled it well. I'm sure he's got a great PR guy. And, you know, I'm sure that guy does not work for the Knicks because they would have fumbled this thing like you wouldn't believe. But good job, Julius. We're rooting for you. Hopefully you have a triple-double and a win in the next game. And that's going to do it for us here on the All Hoops podcast. Thank you for watching on YouTube or listening on the audio version. We'll be back next week to talk more NBA action.
Bye, everyone. Take it easy.